The Precinctor Raider Weekly Miniatures News Podcast is brought to you by Zero Dark Sci-Fi Skirmish Gaming in a Fallen Earth. You can find Zero Dark from Wargame Vault. Just go to wargamevault.com and search for Zero Dark.
Welcome to the Precinct Omega Weekly Miniatures News Podcast. It is Friday, the 19th of June, and I am going a bit light this week. Let's have a look at the news.
The news.
Puppets War have announced updates to their human heavy infantry bikers, including some samurai-style heavy infantry on equally heavy bikes. Can't imagine who they are looking at matching up with there. Anvil Industry have announced new parts in the Exolords heavy infantry range, including a mechanical arm conversion set. Hassle-Free Miniatures has given previews of new additions to their sci-fi range, so far only seen in their green state, but looking very nice indeed. Monster Fight Club has announced a forthcoming new terrain Kickstarter starting, well, actually, yesterday, according to my notes, for a range of modern buildings in pre-printed hardboard. Speaking of terrain, Acid House Terrain is running a Kickstarter for folding card easy carry set of sci-fi terrain, which has successfully funded at over £22,000, with a date to finish towards the middle of July. Troublemaker Games, who've also been struggling with some Kickstarters recently, have had a successful Kickstarter complete for post-apocalyptic sci-fi terrain, which is being offered as printable STLs only.
The discussion.
So as I said before, I'm looking to try and keep things quite light this week. We've been pretty heavy on this podcast for the last few weeks. I've been digging into some fairly serious subjects, and I did want to take a little break and ease it off for a couple of weeks. It doesn't mean that these aren't still going to be I don't know, serious is the wrong word, but these topics are going to be a little bit lighter in nature. So although I could talk about the issues of cultural appropriation, that means every Japanese faction in a sci-fi game seems to have ninjas, samurai and sumo wrestlers. Yes, Urban War, I'm looking at you. I have, however, seen Full Metal Alchemist and Seven Deadly Sins, and it kind of feels like wholesale cultural appropriation between Japan and Western Europe is a heavily populated two-way street. So I think I'm just going to chill out about that as an issue. Starting on the 22nd of June is Mech Week, so I ought to talk to you about mechs. But I'm not going to, because, look, my whole week next week is going to be all mechs, and I need a little break before that. So at the end of next week, I will record another episode all about mechs for this podcast. Instead, this week, I'm going to talk about a different topic dear to my heart, and that's game-agnostic miniatures. Now, there's been a fair bit of chatter around, especially right now, about miniatures-agnostic games. Partly that's probably just going to be that I notice because of the circles I move in when I'm promoting Precinct Omega. But it's also spread out from there to infect some pretty die-hard game-specific communities who seem to be frustrated by their inability to game during lockdown, because most of the major miniatures manufacturers either haven't released solo versions of their core games, or have released solo-friendly games but at moderately extortionate costs, or have rushed out solo game modifications that are less than well thought out. Hence, a lot more people are looking for alternative game options into which they can slot their existing miniatures collection. But what are the options out there for the opposite? That is, for miniatures that can find a role in multiple different games. Now, at first glance, it makes a lot of sense. in a way, it ought to maximise the return on your investment if you buy a mini that can be used in a wide range of games, surely. But in practice, people tend not to buy game-agnostic minis. This is partly because of the aforementioned domination of the market by Games Workshop. Oh, by the way, I've had the 97% figure that I put on the domination of GW. I've had that challenged, and I do plan to unpack that appraisal in more detail in the future. But frankly, whatever number you decide to put on it, there is only one publicly traded miniatures wargaming company with a network of proprietary retail stores, and that's our old friend. This dominance makes a nonsense of that logical argument by creating a circle that's either vicious or virtuous, depending on whether you are or are not Games Workshop. Games Workshop stores provide play space, making it easy to find a game there, where the use of their miniatures is, of course, mandatory. As a result, people tend to buy Games Workshop miniatures to play Games Workshop games in Games Workshop stores. That maximises their opportunity to play. And then consequently, people who also attend spaces not controlled by Games Workshop, such as independent retailers and wargaming clubs, they tend to already be invested in Games Workshop games with Games Workshop miniatures and therefore continue to play Games Workshop games with Games Workshop miniatures. As a result, if you want to maximise your playing time as a return on your investment in the miniatures, you will tend to buy GW minis to play GW games. Where other games tend to be successful is when they set up a microcosm of the same formula, without the advantage of the retail network. So generally, you can only play Infinity with Infinity miniatures. In the tournament system, it's mandatory. But even off-piste, it's a lot easier to do so. The game is designed that way. You can only play Star Wars Legion with Legion minis. And in fact, Fighting Fantasy Games has specifically adjusted the scale of the miniatures between Imperial Assault and Star Wars Legion to make sure that this was the case. Any arguments to the contrary are disingenuous at best. Now, Fantasy Flight in particular are masters of this, and they have set up a model that others have followed, because play invariably in their games requires access to special cards or tokens that can be acquired only by purchasing the miniature that goes with them. This creates a further psychological trick that merges the ideas of reciprocity and sunk cost. So if I want to own a particular Star Wars Legion mini, but I don't play the game, I get the cards whether I want them or not. And as I acquire more minis, I acquire more cards. The cards are part of the money I spent on the minis, and they're good-looking objects that appear to hold value, so I don't dispose of them. Now, the more I own, the more likely I am to eventually play Star Wars Legion, regardless of my actual interest in the game, because I've been given these objects by FFG, setting up a sense of reciprocity in which I feel obliged to play their game in return. And I've sunk money into owning these objects, so I feel obliged to play their game to feel I'm getting maximum value from my investment. It's very clever. If you think you aren't being manipulated by the industry, you are wrong. Anyway, the result of this is that buying game-agnostic miniatures becomes harder and harder to justify on the basis of a return on investment. You may end up owning dozens of games of which you could use your game-agnostic minis, but you can't play any of them because all of your potential opponents are playing mainstream games into which they've already sunk their investments. And this is a huge shame, because a lot of game-agnostic minis are really beautiful. I love the style and variety of Hasselfree in particular. But there are so many small one or two person companies out there making game agnostic minis. Bad Squiddo, Macrocosm, Brigade Models, Kurasan Miniatures. I could go on with a long list. It's depressing how many give in to making minis that are designed to use in mainstream games. I mean, I was sad, for example, to notice that Anvil Industry has quietly given up on developing their Afterlife game and gone back to focusing on their not 40k range of Exolords. Afterlife was a decent game, and the minis recognised women and people of colour in their designs before it was fashionable. And yeah, by the way, I will talk about the representation of women in miniatures eventually. I was due to do it this week, but what with Black Lives Matter going on and Pride this week, I thought that the zeitgeist was all about seeing people of colour, and especially LGBTQ people of colour, right now. But I will come back to female representation in a future podcast. Going back, though, to game-agnostic minis. I think we are standing at an important junction. Two factors are in play that are going to create a shift in our attitude to these. The first has been the international lockdown. Like I said, it's pushed more people towards exploring solo and co-op miniatures gaming action, and that's been an opportunity for those games that are usually miniatures agnostic. And that in turn has opened up people's eyes to the game agnostic minis they could own that aren't from the mainstream manufacturers. Whether it's created a boost in sales for other people, I couldn't say, but it's not done me any harm for sure. Second is the rise of the 3D printer. Just a year ago, this was an expensive and frustrating second hobby for people who had bought into it. You needed to master new software, learn to wrestle with a complex piece of temperamental hardware, and put up with a lot of your initial investment going into ugly failures or almost equally ugly successes. But new printers, lower prices, and better software are transforming access to this technology. And in response to that change, more and more 3D artists are creating their own designs for miniatures enthusiasts to print at home. Do you know, it's no exaggeration to say that it is miniatures enthusiasts and miniatures wargamers who are driving the market for the domestic 3D printer. There are still some missing pieces in the jigsaw, though. The lack of recyclability is the main one, and one that's being worked on by several manufacturers. I think the point at which failed prints, or prints that turn out to be unwanted or unnecessary, can be tossed into a print shredder and turned back into material that can be pumped back into the printer for a new print, will basically sound the death knell for Games Workshop as a miniatures manufacturer. Now, they won't go anywhere, of course, and it won't be an overnight change. But before they reshape themselves to the new normal, there's going to be a window of opportunity, one that has already opened a crack for developers of game-agnostic miniatures. Where this has already opened wide is in the subject of game-agnostic terrain. To an extent, it might be argued that the big manufacturers have missed a trick by failing to create proprietary game-critical terrain. That's not to say they haven't tried, but I think it was a harder prospect. Corvus Belli made the best effort by creating scenarios for their Infinity Tournament system that required some very specific items of scenery with very specific measurements. But in their defence, they mostly declined to monetize the demand, and instead they've licensed the Designed for Infinity logo to manufacturers who are out with their control. And I should say, I have no idea whether they've charged anyone for the right to use that logo, but honestly, I'd be surprised. All of this has left a strong gap in the market for people like Acid House Terrain, Monster Fight Club and Troublemaker Games to develop distinctive game-neutral terrain in a range of media. In this case, we've got printed card from Acid House, printed hardbore from Monster Fight Club, and digital files from Troublemaker. So, right now, it seems to be terrain that's opening up new opportunities for small producers, allowing them to explore technologies, exploit market gaps, and gain attention and customers that they can pivot into new projects. As always, you can expect the big manufacturers to be paying attention, and if something from that looks to be becoming the next thing that their customers want, you can be sure that they will take the idea from their unpaid R&D departments and turn it to their own purposes. But right now, things are looking promising for the future of game-agnostic minis.
Precinct Omega.
I've said it more than once that Precinct Omega is a game company, not a miniatures company. Still, the shifts, and especially those in the 3D market, are starting to make me increasingly interested in the development of minis inspired by the setting, hardware, and characters from my games. This is particularly true when I look at the art that's being produced for me for Operation Nemesis, the forthcoming supplement for Zero Dark. The characters on the front cover of the core rulebook and Operation Nemesis would make great minis, but you can't buy them. I would love to buy them, so I tend to assume that other people would like to as well. But even if I do start to develop minis, either internally or in some kind of licensing arrangement with a partner, Precinct Omega is going to remain a games company. The big manufacturers have always treated games as marketing tools to shift miniatures, and as a consequence, game design has always had to suffer in the name of shifting SKUs. I have absolutely no intention that Precinct Omega should follow that model. In fact, quite the opposite. I would like to explore the production of miniatures as a marketing tool to sell more games. Now, 5 or even 2 years ago, I would have said that was insane. A game is a one-off purchase, but people will buy miniatures forever if the game wants them to. It's a tactic that's put Games Workshop into the headlines of the financial press, after all. But I read the future differently. I think increasingly people are buying ideas, not things. People spend money on costumes for characters in Fortnite, for heaven's sake. I was playing Scrabble Go the other day and found myself seriously, but briefly, I hasten to add, contemplating an in-app purchase with actual money. As a result, increasingly selling a game, especially a miniatures game, should be seen as selling an idea. And as a result, publishers should be thinking about how immersive they make the idea and how it can be, in the nicest possible way, exploited. Games Workshop's most valuable property, the thing that will allow them to keep going and keep operating beyond the end of conventional miniatures manufacture, is their intellectual property, and especially the Warhammer 40,000 property. Horizon Wars is my property, and by my, I mean the property of Roby Jenkins Esquire, not Precinct Omega Limited. Precinct Omega as a company has my tacit permission to exploit the property, and it's conceivable, albeit unlikely I admit, that at some point in the future I might even sell Precinct Omega. But there is no way I'm going to sell Horizon Wars. It's too valuable, too personal. So, finding interesting new ways to encourage more people to engage with that property is very much in my business plan, and if I can include creating miniatures inspired by it, it would make me very happy. That's all I've got to say for this week. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you'll be tuning in and looking out for Mech Week content as much as I can create next week. I will speak to you again in the next Precinct Omega Weekly Miniatures News podcast. Goodbye.
The Precinct Omega Weekly Miniatures News podcast is supported by our patrons on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/Precinct Omega to support the Patreon, developing new miniatures games and creating hobby content for Wargames miniatures enthusiasts all over the world.